You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to the Fish Nerds. It's a celebration of fish, fishing, and eating fish tacos. That's always interesting, usually funny, and mostly true. I'm Jared from Podcast Movement, and here are the nerds.
I'm Clay Groves, King of the Nerds! And anything is fair game, and it's a good bet that ice fishing this year has been so good, I might give up podcasting to become a full-time fisherman. I wish. Anyway, welcome to the Fish Nerds. Today, it's your host, Clay Groves, just me all by myself hanging out, but I have some help from friends. Luckily, the Fish Nerds fans have come through and are helping create content, and we're always looking for more content. So if you're a fish nerd, and you think, man, I like those fish nerds, and I like what they do, and I want to contribute, you're welcome to record stories and send them in, and if they are reasonably good and or funny or mostly true, we might use them on the show. The other thing we're still looking for is we're still looking for fishing stories. We're looking for fishing adventure stories. We're looking for about 16 to 20 total. We've got about 10 so far for our upcoming book on fishing adventures. If you have a story to tell, email the story to clay@fishnerds.com and we will use it in the ebook as soon as we get enough together. The amazing James is going to help edit it, and it's going to look really cool, and you guys will be published authors. You ever want to be a fish writer? Now's your chance to give it away. So that's what's happening. So that's what's happening in the news in the fish world right now. Next week, I'm releasing the 4th episode in the series on becoming a licensed New Hampshire fishing guide. I've led my first fishing trip, and stay tuned. I did a little audio work on the ice while doing it, but you might even be impressed. If you want to hire me to take you fishing, and you should, head to fishnerds.com to get all the info you need. All I'm going to tell you right now is this week, the last week, has been the best ice fishing I've ever seen. And I'm not being facetious. I've never had a better week of ice fishing. It's been great. I fished Sunday, my first guide trip, and then I went out just at lunchtime every day this week just for an hour to fish. And I have caught, here's what I've caught this week. We've caught lake trout, lots and lots of lake trout, which I've never caught through the ice, lots of lake trout before, but now I know where they live. We've caught brook trout, beautiful, beautiful brook trout, rainbow trout, smelt, brown bullhead, and some monster yellow perch, which we actually ate. Fantastic. So that's what's happening with fishing, and we have a lot going on here. I'm going to move right into Guides Corner with Michael Frank. Michael Frank is a licensed fishing guide in Columbia, South Carolina. He was a fan of the show, and now he's a contributor. He's one of our effing correspondents. For more information on Michael Frank, go to franksflyarts.com.
Do women fish? Of course they do. Some of my earliest memories fishing are of guided trips on party boats fishing for fluke in Long Island's Great South Bay with my family. Our Uncle Joe, a legend of financial success in our family, whose favorite niece happened to be my mom, would bankroll the trips, paying the hefty sum of $30 a head on the Captain Joseph II, plus rod rental, tips, and entry into the pool. Mom loved those trips, and though she was happy to let us or the mate put her live killie and squid strip on her hook, she got a real thrill out of winching those flatfish off the bottom and watching the mate net them as they planed along near the surface. Later, when I was in my teens, I convinced her to come on a bluefish boat. She didn't enjoy that as much, since we had to reel 2-ounce diamond jigs from the bottom to the top really fast in 60-plus feet of water to catch them. With her arm aching from cranking all day, she told me she was happy to go back to fluke fishing, because, as she said, that was work. Then there was my sister Beth, who could take it or leave it when it came to fishing. More often than not, she would come along on those trips, and she usually only had one motivation: the prize money. You see, Uncle Joe, the man who had made me cry and instantly cured me of any possible gambling addiction the first time I sat down to play penny poker with the family, was very generous when it came to fishing. Unlike his other investments, in which he made hefty returns, fishing trips were investments in family fun. So if you won the pool, the collected $3 fee that went to the person who caught the biggest fish, JoJo was kind enough to let you keep all of your winnings. And my sister won. And won. There was no rhyme or reason for this. The fish just liked her bait more than anyone else's, and there were many days when my little sister basks in the glory of holding up a doormat fluke, putting all the old salts on the boat to shame, and $60 to $100 in her pocket while I looked on in bewildered envy. So I know why my sister liked to fish. Why do other women fish? I will be interviewing a few of my former clients in the coming weeks to find out more about this. We will talk to ladies whose husbands or significant others dragged them to the river, and those who have fished all their lives. Some are newbies who got hooked on this pastime recently and will be anglers for life. Others are dedicated anglers who really like having that big fish pick on their desk at work to show the boys that they kick butt inside and out of the office. I'm really looking forward to catching up with some of these ladies and sharing what they enjoy most about fishing. This is gonna be fun.
Always fun to have Michael Frank on the show. And in just a few weeks, I'm going to be going to the New England Fishing and Outdoor Expo. And Go Fish Dan called me today on Skype, and he wanted to talk about that. So, man, we're just going fast, one person to the other.
Answer the phone, Go Fish Dan.
Welcome to the Fish Nerds. We are very excited today because we have Go Fish Dan, Dan Kenny, from the New England Fishing and Outdoor Expo. Go Fish Dan also runs the very popular, world-renowned Go Fish Dan TV channel on the YouTube. And so as soon as we get Dan on Skype here, we will make this call rock. Try him again.
Hello, Clay.
Hey, Dan. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Good to hear from you, buddy.
That's good to hear your voice. And you are joining us via Skype. And where do you live, man?
I live in Leicester, Massachusetts, which is between Worcester and Sturbridge.
So we're actually recording now, which is great, great fun. And the reason we have you on the show, there's two reasons. One is we want to talk about your big expo, and this is your big event of the year, the New England Fishing and Outdoor Expo. Three big days, Friday, the 27th of January, the 28th, and the 29th in Boxborough, Massachusetts. Fish Nerds will be there, at least I will. And but this is turning out to be a really big deal, man. Like this, I've been watching your show for a few years now, haven't never made it down there, but this year seems to be like blowing up. What's going on?
Well, essentially, I took over the Worcester show 5 years ago and ran it at the DCU Center, and that's a lot of space to fill. So I moved it strategically out to the Boxborough Regency, formerly the Holiday Inn. And what's going on is quite simple. I'm an outdoorsman like you, and I got tired of going to shows where you had insurance companies and bath fitters and Owens Corning insulation and gutters and beads and ShamWows and you name it. So I downsized and said, my niche is going to be the hardcore angler. So it's a premier quality fishing show. And when you walk up and down each and every aisle, it has to do with major brands, tackle, gear, rods, reels, lures, local brands, jig makers, plastic makers, etc. And I'm the only show in New England that brings in the Bass University, the Hog Trot. And one of the things that I kind of pride myself in is if a company is there with a booth or a manufacturer is there with a booth, I allow the pro staffer to go up and do a tank demo with that product.
Hold on a second, because a lot of people have never seen a tank demo. I haven't. So can we back up a little bit and talk about what tank demo means? Because it's confusing for those who don't live in your worlds. And you're in a very nerdy world.
Okay, well, so we bring in what's called the Hog Trot. It's 50 feet by 10 feet. It's a trailer, basically, but it's an aquarium. It's filled with bass, and it's got a boat mounted to the top of it. And the bass pros or the seminar presenters go up there and do usually technique-specific demonstrations. So, for instance, there'll be a guy that'll do a jig seminar, and we'll talk about, you know, deep structure fishing. There'll be the next guy will do a swim bait. The next guy will do a jerk bait, and the next guy could do drop shotting, you know, in 90 feet of water type of a demonstration. So it really covers what we tried to do over the 3 days is cover just about every technique and method of fishing that you would encounter out there and demonstrate it in the tank. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And a really fun thing for families and kids is you got this, it's a giant tank of fish. And you can't, right. How do you lose when you have a giant tank of fish? It's a huge aquarium. I mean, it must be so exciting for the kids to walk in and just see this thing. Now, expos don't make sense to some people. Why would a family want to go to an expo like this? What's happening here to attract families?
Okay, so we have seminars around the clock at two locations and the tank demos. So for the family, whether they have children that are into the outdoors or the wife, girlfriend, or the husband, you can learn. It's a great learning atmosphere. But as far as the fun goes, archery for the kids, they can shoot all day long, doesn't cost anything. There's laser shot. They can catch trout. We also have a trout pond. And, some places charge the kids. We don't. I just believe in if the kid wants to catch trout for 6 hours straight, I'm okay with it.
Oh, I'm going to go there and be a kid.
Perfect.
Yeah, and here's the great thing. $10 to get in. Kids are free, right, under 12?
Yes.
Totally free. So cheap day for the family, but really like high-quality fun for the $20 for a family to get in there. I mean, that's not bad.
Free parking as well.
Hey, that's something. And Bass University, I've been reading about this a little bit. That's kind of a big deal.
Yes, I bring in the elites. Again, I have an exclusive. They only come to my show in New England. Mm-hmm. And it's every year it's the top, six anglers from the elite series, basically. And they come in and that rotates. So this year we have Chris Lane, 2012 Bassmaster Classic champ. We got Ish Monroe, Cajun Baby, Cliff Crockett, Mark Daniels, Pete Gluzek, and Chad Pipkins. There you go.
You memorized them.
Yes, and that'll be this year. But they are on the elite trail, as mentioned, which means you can come, take their picture, get an autograph, and we also open up an hour window at the tank where not only do they do their demos on the tank, but we literally have an hour set aside where they stand behind a table and interact with the fans. You're allowed to go back there, take pictures, get autographs, ask them questions, and it's a very informal Q&A session.
Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know this, these guys are like the NFL superstars of the bass world. They are as big as it gets.
Right.
And so it's a big deal that you got these guys there. So that's really exciting. Tell us about some of the other things you're excited about with this expo. What else is happening there?
Well, what's happening is that it's a premier fishing show. There's brands. Anybody who's anybody is going to be there. There's Tackle Supply Depot and Red Top Sporting Goods as retailers. But we have, you know, Quantum, Fenor, Strike King, Daddy Mac Lures. We have Radfish, Filthy Anglers, Enigma Fishing. You know, and I know I'm going to leave some people out, but
you can't list them all.
Go to the website www.nefishandexpo.com and look under exhibitors. And again, you know, not arrogantly speaking, Clay, but you know, we have shows all through New England, and I basically ask people to compare our vendor list to others.
Well, that's cool. And I've, like I said, I've known you for a few years, and so the expo is exciting. We're going to be there. We think everyone who's in the region should make a plan one of those 3 days to get out there and check it all out. And again, that's nefishingexpo.com, and that's January 27, 28, and 29 in Boxborough, Massachusetts at the Boxborough Regency. And it's going to be a ton of fun. And a lot of the characters who've been on the Fish Nerd show over the years are going to be there, so which is fun for me. It's like a kind of old homecoming almost in a sense. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, and that's you know, that's what you just touched on, but one of the things that sets us apart also is we have one location where all the vendors and attendees can literally come and just hang out and talk fishing. But it's a family vibe. It really is. It's the community of New England companies that are all there to support each other. I'm really big on that. And there's quality, of course, but it's just a vibe that we've created where you want to come and not walk through in 45 minutes. You actually want to stay for 5 hours and have fun.
Which is amazing. So that's exciting. New England Fishing and Outdoor Expo, nefishingexpo.com for more information. And if you reach out to Dan, he's pretty quick to get back. If you have any questions, just send him an email or call him. Dan, I want to talk about one more thing.
Yes, sir.
So I want to talk about Go Fish Dan TV. I want to talk about your YouTube channel.
Okay.
Just for a minute. Now, first of all, for those who don't know, you have this YouTube channel called Go Fish Dan. You've been doing it for years on cable access. It's a very popular show. And I want to congratulate you because you do what I think is remarkable. That is make a living doing fishy entertainment.
Right.
I've been trying it for years. I'm not a good business person or something. But you do it. And so I want to congratulate you. I'm proud of you and I'm excited for everything you do. I see what you're doing and I'm like, man, that guy's doing great. I'm so proud. But tell us about Go Fish Dan TV, where it came from and where people can find that because it's pretty cool.
Well, it's on the Charter Communications Network every Saturday morning and has been for 5 straight years and on cable access stations around the country and PEG Media. But I've transitioned that to basically a YouTube market, and the channel is Go Fish Dan Show. I've been fortunate to start a few years ago before GoPros, before drones, and I literally had a camera with a tape and a laptop, and I would figure out how to press buttons and edit, and it was I did it more of just of like, hey, this is cool, and then I was able to pick up a couple of sponsors, and I've turned that into, like you said, I'm making a living. I'm very happy doing the Go Fish Dan Show, and the expo is actually my main passion because, you know, you hit the nail on the head. To make a living in the fishing industry, one, is extremely tough. It's a lot of work. A lot of people don't understand the work that goes in behind the scenes to not only Go Fish Dan Show, but taking care of sponsors and the expo. It is a full-time job, but how cool is it that it's a full-time job in the fishing industry versus sitting at a desk listening to a boss tell you what to do?
I totally agree. You know, and I enjoy my regular work that pays my bills, but I definitely enjoy the fishing work more. And so I watch what you do and I'm like, I just try to like, what can I learn from people like you? And it's really great. So you can check out, we'll have links at fishnerds.com to all of this stuff. And one more question. What was the very best fish you caught in 2016? Fish of the year.
52.4 pound striper off of Block Island with Fishnet Charters Captain Mel True.
Oh, I saw that photo. Blew my friggin' mind.
Yep, I joined. Yeah, so I have to say, hands down, I mean, I caught some sharks in Florida earlier in the year, which, you know, 9, 10-foot sharks, that was great. Walleyes out in the Midwest, that's always fun. and of course the thousands of bass, trout, and salmon through the year. But that striper to have a personal best, I beat my previous personal best, which was 47.5 pounds. So I basically bested it by 5 pounds, joined the 50-pound club, and quite honestly, I may never catch another one that big.
No, so, that's definitely a lifer. That's totally a lifer. Yeah, well, congratulations. And again, more information can be found at nefishingexpo.com. And that was Dan Kenny from Go Fish Dan and the New England Fishing and Outdoor Expo. Cool. Thanks, Dan.
Hey, you have a great one, Clay. Have a great weekend. And let's go. Fish Nerd Nation, come to the show.
All right, we're going to do it. You're not going to want to miss that expo because I'm going to be there. I'll sign something for you. Out in California, we've got our friends, Fish Guy Josh and the Amazing James. I should tell you, the Amazing James is a balloon animal expert, and my daughters and I have been trying to learn to tie balloon animals. We keep texting James photos of our balloon creations, and he keeps sending us photos of better balloon creations. So someday we'll be as good as the Amazing James, but we will only ever be mediocre. We're never going to be amazing. So anyway, the Fish Guy Josh and the Amazing James are part of the FN West, our West Coast Fish Nerds. These guys are really great, and we're so happy to have them on the show. And the story they're sharing this week is called Boat Battery and Hell Sturgeon.
Amazing James.
What's up?
Nothing much. Just
it's cold.
Waiting to finish up this segment so I can go check on the lab.
Oh, how's the lab doing these days?
I don't know yet. I haven't checked since the weekend.
Oh, it was a long weekend.
I did pop in the long weekend because we collected seaweed while we were on the coast.
Yeah.
So I swung some by the lab.
Speaking of seaweed. I learned something new this weekend. I learned that there's a way to not kill sandworms. You ever have your sandworms just like slowly die in your refrigerator and stink it up? There's a reason why my mom never let me keep sandworms in the fridge. But
yeah, I know there's like, isn't there some kind of rinsing thing you can do with them?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? And I did that last year with a couple and they lasted a little longer. But this one guy I ran into who was fishing out here for smelt the other day told me if you actually let them swim in the water for a little while, you just fill up your bucket, let them swim in there for a good half hour, and then put them back in the container with some fresh seaweed, some fresh rockweed or whatever, that they do really well. But he said he keeps his for weeks, like weeks or months, which shocks me. But
yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, I ran into him while I was out there working on the boat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, where were you working on the boat? At the point here?
Yeah. So it's in the lock here.
Oh, in the lot, and you saw him going fishing. Okay.
Yeah. So, hey.
Hey.
I have a boat.
Sweet.
Yeah. I had a fun weekend. I spent 2 of the 3-day weekend days working on the boat. I meant to actually take it out, but...
But you worked on it instead. At least you heeded my warnings early on. I remember that day we launched the boat.
Yeah.
With no working fuel line. And I said, no, you just got to like take it back,
right?
Get it right, and enjoy the ride later when nothing's breaking down on you.
I think maybe we should start a whole segment about the boat. We should just start like a regular, like...
The boat.
Yeah. Like hellish stories.
Have you
from
come
the boat
up with a name
with,
for it yet?
With Amazing James. For the boat, no.
Okay.
It's making me happy though. I think it's going to be a good name if I name it. So the project this weekend was to redo all the electrical.
Okay.
It was a total rat nest underneath.
Like literally a rat nest?
No, not a literal rat nest. It could have been. but the wires were just a total mess. So I started splicing things out and figured out, like, they sold it to me without the consoles for fish finder, and there was a little tachometer. And so the wires were still in there. I removed those wires and crossed my fingers. I actually cut the right ones, and I'm pretty sure I cut the right ones. there's still one wire in there. There's a hot lead that's just there. and I'm not exactly sure why, but it's just hanging out. Anyway, so if you can follow me on this, here's what happened. Day one, I get through with getting the anchor onto the new toggle switchboard. I have five toggle switches, right? So I get the anchor plugged into it. I get the lights and I get the radio plugged into it, right?
The anchor.
Yeah, it's got an electric winch. Like, yeah, it's got a winch on for the
anchor.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah, it's pretty
that's
cool.
Fancy.
Yeah, that was actually with it when I got it. Hmm. Fancy. It didn't have bow lights or stern lights, but it had an anchor motor.
You could anchor in the dark and wait to be hit by something.
So I'm out there all day. Jess texts me at like 5 p.m. It's getting dark, and she says, "Hey, if you could be here in 5 minutes, I could use your help getting the kids in the car. We're going to the zoo for zoo lights. It's the last thing, zoo lights. So I get all my stuff done, run out and just leave it for the next day, come and enjoy zoo lights, come back the next morning, and I have to fill in, I think it was one more light I had to do, and I disconnected the battery. I wanted to get the battery cables redone as well. So I go ahead and reconnect the battery, and I go and I do a couple more things. I had to put in the bilge pump, right? So I do the bilge pump. Flip the switches on the bilge pump and everything. Bilge pump starts buzzing. Everything's great. Turn the lights on. Everything's great. And then I realized I'd left the anchor line a little bit down. So I got to wind it back up. Well, guess what? I go to put it up and it goes down. So now you'd think that would be enough for me to figure out what the problem is right there. Like that should be, you know, clue number one. Something's backwards.
Yeah.
No. Next thing I noticed
is
that...
No, you didn't realize that right?
No. So then I turn on the CB. I turn on the VHF radio, right? And it doesn't turn on.
Your Craigslist special, right?
Yeah, $50. Awesome. Little hummingbird. And I turn it on, and the lights don't come on. Nothing comes on. It triggers the circuit breaker, right? So I'm like, oh my God, I just fried this thing too. I have no idea what I did. In addition to this, that I keep on trying and retrying and trying to figure out, I look at the wiring, make sure everything's wired up the way it was. I mean, literally I'm on my back underneath the panel,
under the console,
breathing in all the nice dust from the, fiberglass that I just cut out. And I just can't for the life of me figure it out. The lights also, the LED lights, I didn't know this. The LED lights wouldn't turn on. They were dark the night before. They were fine. And now they're dark. So go home, do some research, figure it all out. Guess what? VHF radio won't work when you have reverse polarity. You know? Who knew? Who knew?
See previous statement of anchor going down.
Yeah, going down instead of up. And then it turns out LED lights also do not function when they are reverse polarity.
Who'd have thought shit doesn't work when it's backwards?
So I, you know, like, I'm just saying.
God, don't you hate when you like?
I was
trying so hard to conquer a problem, and like you spend a whole day on it, and then the next day it's like something super simple, and you're like, damn it,
that's all it was. But I gotta tell you, I was thrilled to death that when I got it back to the way it was, you know, red on positive.
Anchor line goes up when you hit up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, honestly, the guy's wiring system was pretty shitty to the point that. Yeah. The red line was actually black. Like he just used whatever he had.
Whatever.
So I had actually labeled the red line with tape after that. I made sure that I had some red tape on the red line.
So you wired it what you thought was correct.
Yeah.
And it was backwards because the wire colors were backwards.
The wire colors were both black.
Oh.
Really helpful.
Oh, it was a guessing game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway. Well, anyway.
Cool. Right on. I actually hope... as far as following up our resolutions of 2017, I hope that we are able to utilize your boat to try and do some sturgeon fishing at some point.
They are catching sturgeon right now and pointing over there. So I know you guys who are listening can't see where we are.
We're standing like on the bridge of a ship, essentially. It's an old training facility for the Navy way back when. And so... We are overlooking the bay right now on what's meant to look like the big bridge of a Navy ship, but it's actually just like an arched room with a bunch of windows in it, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
So James is literally pointing to where the sturgeon are biting.
They're over there.
But even if they're no longer biting there, I mean, just Dumbarton or going to Sassoon Marsh would be good. And Dumbarton, it's hard to land the sturgeon on the bridge. But if you have a boat, I hear it's a lot easier. Like, you don't have to use the crab pot to, like, net the sturgeon.
Yeah, yeah. So there's all sorts of laws out here about not taking them out of the water, for example.
Yeah.
That makes it hard. So being in a boat is actually pretty helpful.
Yeah.
I've heard horror stories about people catching, like, 5-footers right off the rocks out here and having to walk back and forth, like, a mile each way until they finally get them out.
Yeah.
And they have to get in the water, you know, to get them.
Yeah, I want to do that. I have a sturgeon rod. I need to put some line on the spool and take it out, and I have one of my surf rods I want to use too, but I'm ready to go with 2 rods that are fit for sturgeon.
I put my rod holders on the boat. They're now in. So
yeah, that's my, as far as doing stuff in your boat, I would like to do sturgeon fishing and definitely like some surf perch.
Yeah, well, now is the time. The guy at the bait shop told me they caught, he's heard about 6 of them being caught right off the ferry point out there.
Cool.
So yeah, that is a good spot. I want to get a depth finder or a fish finder on there. I've been going to the consignment store trying to find one, but it's a specifically like marine consignment place. Mm-hmm. So they haven't had one yet, but I'm looking forward to getting one.
Right on.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll out there. Let's do
the
it soon.
The boat story continues.
Yeah, the boat saga.
Cool.
All right. Until next time, I'm Amazing James.
I'm Fish Guy Josh, this is at the Nest.
Okay, thanks Fish Guy Josh and the Amazing James. You guys could do this all day, so really great stuff. And they say there's no such thing as a free boat. I was offered a free boat last year, and I didn't take it. A friend of mine got a free boat, and he's put about $6,000 into his free boat. And his advice is, if someone offers you a free boat, save up $6,000 and buy a boat. So that's what they say there. All right. So how about some fish in the news? First story in is from the Chicago Tribune. And this actually story came through a Facebook page called Fish Feel. The page is all dedicated to stopping any kind of fishing and reminding people that fish are sentient and fish have feelings too. And recently this group has been starting to, not recently, they did it before too, but they're back again starting to show up in the Fish Nerds feeds and protesting locally some of the stuff I'm working on. And we're always happy to have dissent and people who disagree with us. And I never argue with people who believe fish and humans have the same feelings, because you can't win those arguments, but I sure like to listen to them. And if you follow along with the Fish Nerds Facebook group, you can see a whole discussion on there. Maybe I can get someone together with me next week and we can do a little bit of a Facebook theater and do a read-through of that whole conversation. So, first news from Chicago Tribune. Fake fish finds niche in growing faux meat market. This is by Dina Shanker. This is brand new news. Tyson Foods this fall took a 5% stake in Beyond Meat, the company proudly bringing customers fake meat that bleeds. With Impossible Foods' new burgers, that's in quotes, made for high-end restaurants, and a long list of more established companies like Morningstar Farms, Gardein, and Amy's Kitchen, it's never been so easy to forgo animal-based protein. Another piece of the nearly $5 billion plant-based food economy, vegan seafood. Fake tuna, fake crab cakes, fake scallops, with nary a net. Customers of Fresh & Co., a New York City salad chain, can get tomato sushi in their quinoa bowls. Quinoa bowls? New York's Mayhua vegetarian market sells vegan salmon, scallops, and tuna, along with your classic vegan spare ribs and stewed mutton. At Whole Foods, shoppers can pick up Gardein crabless cakes or breaded vegan fish fillets from Sophie's Kitchen. Now, I'm kind of thinking about this a little bit. Vegan diet, totally smart diet. Health-wise, totally good for you. Vegan lifestyle, bizarre. Food, good. What I don't get, and what a lot of people don't get, is if the vegetables are so great, why would you want to make them taste like meat? Why, you know, if you're that far in, just eat vegetables. If you want to eat meat, eat meat. I don't understand. But vegans seem psyched. Growth has been phenomenal at 20% or more a year, said Eugene Wang, managing partner at Sophie's Kitchen. Wang started developing his seafood alternatives because his daughter is allergic to shrimp. That also led him to ditch soy and wheat in search of allergen-free ingredients. Now he uses mainly yellow pea for the protein and konjac, also known as Japanese or elephant yam, for shellfish texture. Curious omnivores may want to start with breaded and fried. Big Food has taken notice even before Tyson's October investment in vegan meat. Pinnacle Foods acquired Gardein Protein International, which also sells plant-based kitchen and beef products. Now, it's confusing because if I'm eating food and it's called salmon, it should be salmon. There should be no fake salmon out there. And I just the whole thing doesn't make any sense to me. I want to see people make vegetables that taste like meat. And when they, that's what they're doing. I want to see somebody make meat that tastes like vegetables. So steak that tastes like broccoli or fish that tastes like tomatoes, that would be really interesting. But the whole thing doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, except for one thing it does. It's good marketing. Vegan market is huge, and vegans aren't poor people. Poor people are omnivores because they're opportunistic. So if you're going to do it, the vegan world's where to do it, I suppose. It's the same as the gluten-free type folks. It's just marketing, marketing, marketing. That said, a case could be made environmentally. It's a smarter way to eat, and we'll have to see how that goes. Although I wonder if processing the vegetables down that much it changes the health value of them. So anyway, you can read more about that at the Chicago Tribune or go to fishnerds.com for the link to the story and join the discussion we have on our Facebook group called the Fish Nerds Podcast Group. Second story from Fish Nerd News. This is from CBS News. When is a fish worth more than $500,000? This is amazing to me. This is in Tokyo, of course. A Japanese sushi chain boss bid a winning 74.2 million yen, which is $632,000 on Thursday for a 466-pound bluefin tuna in what may be Suki Market's last auction at its critical site in downtown Tokyo. The winning bid Thursday for the prized but imperiled species was second highest ever after a record 155.4 million yen bid in 2013 at the annual New Year auction. This year's price was $2,981 per kilogram, compared with about $7,930 in 2013. Captain Sean probably loved this. If he could get one of these tunas sold, he could quit guiding and just go fishing every day. Kayamura Corp. owner Kayushi Kimura posed beaming after the pre-dawn New Year auction with a gleaming man-sized fish, which was caught off the coast of northern Japan's Aomori Prefecture. His company, which runs the sushi Zanamai chain, often wins the annual auction. It sounds like this company just wins that auction every year just to get in the world news. So maybe that money they spent on there has not much to do with that fish at all, but more with how do I make CBS News from Tokyo? Japanese are the biggest consumers of the torpedo-shaped bluefin tuna, and surging consumption of sushi has boosted demand as experts warn the species could go extinct. And that's important to think about. A report by the International Scientific Committee for Tuna and Tuna-like Species in the North Pacific Ocean last year put the population of bluefin tuna at 2.6% of its unfished size, down from an earlier assessment of 4.2%. The Western and Central Pacific Fisheries Commission tightened international limits in 2015 as the species remained under threat, having the catch of bluefin tuna under 30 kilograms from average caught between 2002 and 2004. But overfishing has continued, and in some areas, bluefin are harvested at triple the levels considered sustainable. Interesting article. This went from talking about the value of fish to talking about its decline. It probably should have been two separate articles entirely. But maybe they should... let's take the fake, like, plant-based tuna to Japan and do a double-blind study and see if the Japanese can tell which is which. I suspect they can. But we'll have to see. Anyway, that's Fish in the News. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. So that's it. You've listened to a whole bunch of fish nerds when you should have been fishing. We'd like to thank our families for supporting us while we podcast, go on fishing quests, and do all sorts of silly things that nerds do. If you would like to support the fish nerds, go to patreon.com/fishnerds and help us crowdfund this podcast. $1 an episode would go a long way to keeping this podcast moving forward. Special thanks to, we got a lot to thank. We got to thank the amazing James and Fish Guy Josh. We got to thank Michael Frank. And we have to thank Dan Kenny from Go Fish Dan and the New England Fishing and Outdoor Expo for coming on the show this week. And until next time, follow the code of the fish nerd, spawn early and often, avoid free lunches with strings attached, and swim against the current every chance you get.
Phone, Go Fish Dan.